Welcome to the Father's Day. I am Jesse Lee Peterson. Thank you all so much for being with me. Don't forget, you can support the Father's Day by becoming a member there on the fatherstate.tv, right there on the YouTube channel there, and locals.com. And I do appreciate it. Check out Punchy's Coffee. Our merch is amazing. I have my own coffee. Go to jesseleepeterson.shop. jesseleepeterson.shop. I have with me Tommy Aceto. He is a former U.S. Navy SEAL, a neuroscience mental health advocate, and the founder of the nonprofit organization Neuroscience and Wellness Initiative. Tommy, thank you for coming on.
Well, it's an honor to be on. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. So what is neuroscience exactly?
Well, that's kind of a developing field of science focused on the nervous system, focused on neurotransmitters, neuropeptides, hormones. So things that this system is responsible for, I like to say, is everything from the mind to our emotions, to the way we perceive story, to the way we deal with conflict. All these things that I feel are plaguing society today, a lot of it needs to be studied from the lens of neuroscience.
And so how do you do that exactly?
Well, I did it in a very unique way. I didn't do it a traditional route. I don't have a PhD or an MD license. I was a Navy SEAL for 16 years. I was one of the more experienced trauma medics. I had a passion for medicine since I was a child. I wanted to be a pediatrician. And, you know, good Lord says, I got another plan for you. And not knowing what I was really getting into with the SEAL teams, I found myself there for 16 years studying trauma medicine. But in that community, we're often studied quite a bit, extensively. There's a lot of money that goes into the SEALs. And I got to, as an instructor, I got to work with top psychologists. One of them happens to be Dr. Eric Potterat. He is now the Dodgers sports psychologist. He studied cortisol reuptake. My path towards this lane, it came to be because of my own healing journey. And as a SEAL medic, when I saw what some of these treatments that our top warriors, fighters, they had to leave the country they served to get these treatments. And I knew I've been living in a bubble for 2 decades as a SEAL. And when I saw what I saw down there, it was, there's a lot of other people out there that could really benefit from these things if they're done in the right setting with the right intention and the right guidance. And that's just, in my opinion, not going to happen. And that's why we're doing so much work to try to see if we can get research done, because it should happen through the lens of the government. And we know, like, what that means. That takes, you're going to take a lot. That means it's going to take a lot of change.
And so you run into, when you were a Navy SEAL, you ran into people who were like mentally and emotionally destroyed?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's Veterans Day today. And they say trauma is transferable. And a lot of these men that I've witnessed healing in their life, it's not something that just goes away. You got to work at it. And, you know, that's one of the things I think mental health and society and medicine in general think that the solution's outside of themselves. And I take this pill, I get skinny, I'm good. Or I take this numbing agent, this SSRI, and it's good. Or, you know, all these things that kind of the way we've done medicine is everything fixes us that's outside of us. And as a believer in Christ, I know there's three elements to my faith, and the third one I think needs a lot more attention than the other ones.
What do you do to a mental and emotional person that is suffering? What do you do exactly?
Okay, let me just take you through a kind of an example. I know we kind of jumped way into this, but it's probably where it was going anyways. How it started was, as a Navy SEAL, I was working, ending my career in San Diego, at where the training is, and right across the border in Tijuana, there happened to be these Ibogaine centers, one being Crossroads Clinic, started by Dr. Martin Polanco, who saw a bunch of veterans coming in to try to get treatment from this African bark that comes from a plant called Iboga. It's an alkaloid. And in this alkaloid is a very powerful resetting agent that we're trying to study now, because what happened was Dr. Martin saw these SEALs and veterans coming in to treat their heroin addiction. And he thought maybe there's a relationship to trauma and addiction. And of course, we know now through neuroscience that it's a one-to-one. And this is why this needs to be studied. So he said, well, let's open up a clinic for SEALs and get funding and put them through these treatments. And he kind of came up with a protocol, which was 3 days. You get down there, you would do this one African bark alkaloid. And it was not fun. These were not fun. Like, guys were not showing up like all happy skippy dude. They were showing up barely keeping a gun out of their mouth. And, you know, they were at the wit's end. And so because our strength of the SEAL teams is we know how to pass the word because we're small. And we generally had the same symptoms. So as we started seeing success in these treatments, which weren't easy, they're really tough. And of course, like all psychologists know, that traumas really developed in the early years. So it's compound events. Then you go to war and you see things you shouldn't see and do things you shouldn't do. And, you know, I call it the stain of shame. And these things compound. And what was being offered to us is not simply working. The SSRIs do not work for 80% of the people. And that's what
most of the Navy SEAL were having, mental and emotional problem, because of some type of addiction, or was it because of what they would see while being a Navy SEAL?
The addictions are symptoms of trauma beneath. That's how we deal with the trauma, is the addiction. And so every war that's ever been fought are a bunch of lunatic guys, a lot of them doped up on something, going out and killing each other. And that's the nature of war.
So they were addicted to some form of a drug or something before entering into the Navy SEAL?
I'd say a lot of them were, but not. No, what I'm saying is let's look at it through neuroscience. When you're come from an environment of survival mode and you're out there surviving, it can be like a drug. You get real good at it, and it heightens everything up, like dopamine. So we get these spikes of dopamine because we're not safe, and that can be from my parents arguing to someone's trying to shoot me down the street to, you know, whatever. Yeah. The body doesn't feel safe. These are what we're trying to study to understand the effects on the psychology. So over time, if somebody's groomed in these settings, which that's what Dr. Eric Potterat found, the guy from the Dodgers, he said, I can predict 92% of these kids going through Hell Week that are going to fail because they don't meet the criteria. And the criteria was they weren't pre-exposed to a life of survival. I happen to be. My grandpa was a World War II D-Day professional boxer. I think it probably did the family business stuff in Detroit. My dad tried to steer it the other way, but never got over his lack of, you know, what I call emotional quotient or real, you know, fatherly, godly
But what
love
I'm trying to understand, when they would take this piece of bar down in Mexico or wherever, did they heal completely from the mental and emotional trauma?
So what I saw was that it offered a reset that I couldn't get, because my nervous system was so wound up, I was so good at surviving being a SEAL. We couldn't break through. We couldn't hit the off switch. And so, especially when you see in the transition, is guys are getting this, they're on this roller coaster. They can't lose. They can't quit. They can't say no. They have to go. You know, it's their ego and it's their identity. And so when the identity is not there, this, you can talk about, work with professional athletes, singer songwriters, CEOs. It's always the same. You see the drop off when they lose their identity and you ask yourself why. And it's because a lot of these neurochemical associations to dopamine, to being affirmed, to having a position, it's very psychological. So as a SEAL, you go from being one of the nation's, you know, top warriors and wearing this trident to now what?
So, took this bar down in Mexico or wherever, were they completely healed from the trauma?
Yeah, I like that word healed is a very, people throw it around. And I would say no.
They were not healed.
I would say no. I'd say the healing really, for me, it was my faith that saved me. And then the experience helped me heal. And then from there, I learned how to heal myself through, you know, the things I learned, neuroscience, like saunas, cold plunges, meditation, breath work. You know, your environment will dictate a lot of your success in terms of health, how to let go, really. All these things that no one really teaches us in society, especially in the military. And that kind of journey, I think that what we're finding out about healing trauma of the nervous system, or just how important treating the nervous system is in general and the connection to the heart, like that's a whole nother subject. That's talking about the vagal nerve, and you got the same wiring that reaches around the heart that innervates your face. So when I see these guys do the medicine, especially the next one, which is 2 days later after the bark, it's called 5-MeO-DMT, and it comes from a toad. And when they do this one, they call this one the God molecule, because of this neurological reset that happens, because it's so freaking powerful. If you get in its way, it comes up with like a personalized death.
So
it's horrible.
The bar that they took down in Mexico or whatever, it didn't completely heal the mind and emotion, but it did help. It's all right, right?
I call it a reset.
Okay.
It helps the guys learn how to reset. I think some of the alkaloids, this is the hypothesis. And, you know, I have conversations with Dr. Andrew Huberman from Stanford, who's a huge advocate for us. You know, he's got a great podcast.
So does it work?
Yeah, I think
the
60%.
Neuroscience, does that work? Do you completely heal from that?
Let me put it to you this way. There's nothing else that comes close to these treatments. Nothing from my perspective, nothing comes close. And the thing that I learned the most is the work must continue. The work is what heals the person. They have to understand how to use their prefrontal cortex, and they need to understand how to do it themselves. And that's why I meant when it comes from within.
Oh, okay.
Like, their
so
faith.
Let me ask,
need to have faith.
Let me ask, were you traumatized psychologically and emotionally while as a Navy SEAL as well?
I got diagnosed with PTSD. I saw some things overseas that that were hard as a medic, and young kids that shouldn't be hurt, they get hurt, and you have to be the guy to fix them, and that's leaves a mark,
and you
see it in your sleep.
Are you completely healed now?
Again, there's that word heal. I don't think there's
restored?
A destination. I think I've completely healed my nervous system where I feel like spiritually, physically, and mentally better than ever in my whole life. And I'm 45.
Okay. And
so that's, I don't think that's healed. I mean, you're a pastor, you understand that word very well. And I think that when we say healed, we tend to think that it's like, I have cancer one day, I have zero cancer the next day. It doesn't work like that in mental health. Why? Because you're talking about a nervous system that functions like a computer. And that computer needs to get taken care of. And if it's beaten up and slammed, and here's your connection to trauma and addiction, it's the physical wounds of PTSD or TBI and PTSD. So a boxer gets hit in the head multiple times. You think he's not going to have mood swings or personality changes?
So are you saying that once you're traumatized psychologically and emotionally, you can never be completely restored?
No. I think the opposite. I think
you can't be completely restored.
I think they used to tell us if you injure your brain, it never heals. That's wrong.
Okay.
That's dead wrong. Because right. We know that what we have is a thing called neuroplasticity. It's the ability for a neuron to reach another neuron, to regroove itself. And this is again neuroscience. And this is really why the psychedelic issue is such a big deal. It's because you're starting, if we have the ability to take a 3D MRI and do before and after scans on someone's prefrontal cortex, which is our crown jewel of humanity, because it's what separates us from the herd, for good and for bad. Let me put it to you this way. The demons that we can manifest become much worse if this thing isn't controlled, right? If they don't have the helmet of salvation on, if you want to use that.
So are you completely restored?
I'm as good as I'll ever be, and that doesn't mean I'm injury free. My mind, my body, and my soul are great. I'm on fire for the Lord. I have gratitude, but it's not like it. You don't. There's no destination. There's no utopic thing in life, especially in the mind. You know.
So you don't believe everybody, that. It sounds like, and if I'm not quite understanding what you're saying, but. It sounds like you're saying that you don't believe that you can be completely mentally and emotionally restored.
No, I said I do believe that.
Oh, you do believe that?
I believe that. Oh, now, okay. When somebody says healed, I'm a medical guy, so when I hear the word healed, I'm thinking, you know,
you're thinking
this
physically.
Break is now not broke, okay. And that's physical. That's people who think of physical healing, and I'm talking neurological healing where there's a computer system and it's got, you know, a trillion different messaging flying around your body. I like to think of things as energy, and that's a word that you don't really bring up in science because it probably resonates more like spirit.
Oh, so this stuff that you give the people or that this doctor gives the people, is it psychedelic drugs?
Yeah, so it's from Gabon, Africa, and there's a community down there, and it's pretty amazing studying this tribe.
Does it get you high?
It's not high. It's like not like cannabis. It's not like LSD. It's not like ayahuasca. It's not like anything.
What type of high it gives you?
Well, that's the first thing that happens is when you take it, generally, this is all, you know, subjective, but generally I've seen a couple hundred of these. So you'll get this kind of body feeling. For me, it was audio. I got a lot of audio hallucinations. I didn't really go anywhere the first time I did it. I didn't see anything. The second time I did. And what's fascinating is some guys, when they do it, it's like the guys that have the real hard addictions or a lot of trauma, it's like a truck hit them. The whole night they're heaving, not puking, but heaving and just.
So are you like, you know, hallucinating?
Yeah. I mean.
So this drug that this doctor gives the trauma person, it causes them to hallucinate.
Yes.
And so in hallucination, Do you think it, do you believe that that's a way it's going to help the trauma? It's going to make you well?
So this is what I, this is my hypothesis, is that we have digital and analog. Okay. So the digital is the story. It's the hallucination. It's all the story that we, that that's the output. The in, the analog is all the neurochemistry that's happening. So the analogy we like to use is what Ibogaine does is it takes all these grooves. Like I grew up in the north, and when we ice skated, there was grooves in the ice, and we had to get a Zamboni and smooth out the ice. Well, that's kind of what we think how the Ibogaine works, is it smooths out the ice, and the product is this trip. It's a hallucination experience. Here's what's crazy. If you look back at time, you know, you look at indigenous people, they would say we were crazy as, you know, the Caucasian, you know, thing, because they'd be like, did they not know, like, how we use this?
So you're using the same type of hallucination drugs that the Indian use, that they call the peyote or something like that.
So this
are
opens
you
up to this,
that?
Yeah. This opens the discussion up to all the other psychedelics and plant medicines. You could sit here for weeks talking about the differences and this and that. The Ibogaine comes from Gabon, Africa, and the tribe, you can look it up on any documentary, and you see how they use it. They use it as a community, as a spiritual thing. They use it as a community. When somebody was having problems, they would all take it as a community.
So if one person had a psychological, emotional problem, everybody has to take the psychedelic drugs?
In that tribe, yeah. That's
how
they...
that help that one person if everybody high?
Okay, that's just cool. I'm so happy we're having this conversation, because this is another neuroscience thing. So you got dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, and cortisol. We know what cortisol does. It's the stress hormone. It's the thing that causes the fat around our stomach. It's not good for the heart if you have a lot of cortisol, but you need it, and it's good for you as well. But the one that's called oxytocin, I call it vitamin S. It makes you feel safe. It's why they tell a mother to get skin on skin, and the father to get skin on skin with a baby. That creates oxytocin. When a dog comes up to you and he wants you to pet it right between their eyes, they're getting oxytocin.
And so...
so that's the community part.
Oh, I see. But this drug that you take for the trauma, psychological and emotional trauma, it makes you hallucinate, right? But when you come down from the hallucination, the problems are still there, right?
No, it's how they're dealing. Like that's what needs to be studied, is that when they wake up from these experiences, there's a great number of them. Like I said, 60% are waking up, and their faces, because of that nerve, they're getting answers that they couldn't get in 10 years of talk therapy. There's things that happen in that experience that are so divine that it gives somebody a new perspective, a new outlook. And usually it's so fascinating when they wake up. We have top psychiatrists, psychologists, neuroscientists, cardiologists coming down there to see this. It's not like we're just some, you know, band of merry misfits going down there and doing this. We got UCLA, Stanford. I mean, I got Bobby Kennedy's son used it. This is not like, but you're not having on here because I'm, you know, because we're trying to repeat the 60s.
Right.
The difference here is we have intention. We have neuroscience.
But the problem, what I want to know, though, once you take the psychedelic drug, and you hallucinate, and in this state of hallucination, you see all these different things running through your mind. But once you come down and you're no longer high off the drug or using it, the problems are still there in reality. Do you have to go back on the drug, take some more, so you can hallucinate some more?
Okay, so this is another good debate. Let me address the first part. So the high is, again, I don't know your history or like people listening to this, the high is not the experience of being high on cannabis or
right. No, you hallucinating. LSD. That's pretty serious.
It's like they're not taking a little amount. It's a large amount, and so much so that with Ibogaine particularly, and here's the difference between Ibogaine and the other ones, people should not be doing these. Well, they shouldn't be doing psychedelics at all in a place that's not safe or somebody that's not accredited or knows what they're doing. This is the first thing, and it's probably the most important thing, that there will become, this is, does open up a whole bunch of crap in terms of spiritual stuff. I don't need to go there right now, but it's just that needs to be addressed as well. What I'm trying to say is that that experience, when these guys come down there, they're in a mindset that if they don't get something done fast, or if this doesn't work, it's the end. So this is like, goes from a life-saving, basically psychological life-saving procedure. They don't have a psychological condition that it's deemed life-threatening.
So you're saying that they're at a point, some of them are at a point where they want to commit suicide. It's so bad, right? They want to take their lives.
Yeah, we're grabbing our friends and right. putting them in white vans and driving them across the border because they only trust us.
Right. But then you get them down there, and then you give them this psychedelic drugs, and they start to hallucinate. And so in this hallucination condition or state of mind, they start to feel better. Am I right?
Not necessarily. In that state, there's a lot of, it feels like a lot of energy. Okay. That's the best way to describe it. It's just a lot of energy. And we do teach people before they get down there. And that's the whole integration side of this is, you know, they have to understand how to do breath work, and they have to understand that when things get crazy, you know, you need to be grounded because it could be a nasty experience. If we're right about the neuroscience behind this stuff, and if it does deem to be medicinal value, then we have to look at this as not the trip, but what's happening to the neurochemicals, not just the trip.
But once they do they become addicted to the drug?
No. So this is another huge fallacy, and I'm sure you'll do your research on this. It starts in the 1940s. It came to America in around 1970. A professor from NYU, Norman Lutzoff, and his wife. She's a beautiful black girl. He was a white, geeky professor from NYU. And he was a cocaine addict. And his friend went to Gabon, Africa, and brought back this Ibogaine and said, take this. It could cure you. It did. He gave it to his colleague, who was a heroin addict. Cured him. And from then on, from 1960, the Lutzoffs were trying to get this thing approved. It made it to a girl named Deborah Mosh from the University of Miami, Florida.
But what I want to know, though, when you take this stuff, do you become addicted to the drug itself?
No, it's not addicting at all. It's not.
Do you have to take it every day to survive?
No. But I want to get into the difference.
How often
between,
do you have to take it?
Some people, it's one time. They don't take this again, mostly because a lot of these people that are doing this, some people come down here to take these treatments, uh-huh. and they're like $10,000-$15,000 to go to a good one, like Beyond or Ambio or Mission Within. There's only three that I really know. All the other ones, I wouldn't send anyone there. The thing is that it's expensive. It's hard to get into. The backup right now is over a year. So it's like, there's this bottleneck. I did it twice in 7 years.
You did the psychedelic drug twice?
I did it twice. I did it 7 years ago, and then I did it 3 years ago. And I don't have any,
But do some people get addicted to it, become addicted to it?
No. See, Ibogaine, no. Number one, no. There's no addiction to Ibogaine. To be honest with you, you can get psychologically addicted to cannabis. No question. Chemically, I don't think so.
What happens, though, when reality set in again, they realize they're not. They still have the psychological and emotional issues, they have not gone away. Do they take more drug, more of those drug, the hallucination drugs?
No, no. So if they need to go back and do it again, some guys do. Okay. You know, it's like, look at, compare this to the standard of care for rehabilitation. You're looking at $174,000 per person, 12 visits, and look at their success rate. We have a small portion, and I can only speak from the spec ops community, MMA, professional sports, egotistic people that I've seen be able to afford this, that have hey, I can hire a Navy SEAL to come show me how to do this. So I don't see where this needs to go, which is to the prisons, to the lower economic. This might not happen in my lifetime.
So it's for people with a lot of money.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Okay.
Isn't that how everything works with medicine?
And so because of time here, it doesn't really heal you. It just makes you trip out of your head. It makes you think you're healed, right?
No. It resets you, your nervous system. It resets the neural chemistry in your body, and that's through an experience. So a lot of big pharma companies, they want to try to take the psychedelic effect out of these compounds and then make money and synthesize them and say, well, it's going to get you off your opioids, your fentanyl, your cocaine, your alcohol. Well, you don't have to do a psychedelic trip. And I'm sitting on these calls going, they don't get it. It took experiences, spiritual experiences, real experiences, trauma, to get that person to where they are, to get that programming where it is. It's going to take experience to get out.
When you're hallucinating on this drug, do you feel like you're having a spiritual experience?
Oh, Jesse. If you ask people what's their most spiritual moments in their life, and you get someone that's done one of these, 99.9% of them are going to label an Ibogaine trip as one of the most spiritual things they've ever done. This goes on for thousands of years. The people have been doing this for tens of thousands and 20 of all the way back before we had words. They were doing this.
Let me ask. So you took it and you had a spiritual experience, right?
Okay. So
am I right about that?
Yeah. I'll tell you my experience.
But I'm trying to find out first. When you took it, you had a spiritual experience while you were hallucinating, right?
Yes.
And so what did the spiritual experience feel like? What did that look like? What was it like? In short, what was that?
Sure. The most spiritual experience I ever had in my life was on this 5-MeO-DMT, which is the toad, and it's the same molecule that we make in our body, just slightly off. It's still DMT. We make it. When I did this, I was in a place of such despair. I was at my rock bottom. I lost everything. And I had my faith. I had a rosary in my hand, and they didn't want me to professing my faith because it's not fair to everybody else that's trying to heal psychologically. It could trigger them. And I was totally okay with that. But I remember this medicine hurting so bad the first time I did it, which was 3 years before. And I did it that time. I surrendered everything I had. And it was 100% on Christ's intention. My whole body was completely in line with my faith at that moment. And when I did that, it was like I shot into the body of Christ. I could feel the shame and the horrible just energy from society. And then I kept surrendering. I had one tear, and because it hurt so bad the first time, I didn't want to fight anything. And I had drool coming out of my mouth. Two ladies, one older one younger one, holding space for all these special forces guys at their just the most pivotal part of their life. These women are there for hundreds of them, thousands. And I had two of my SEAL classmates that I hadn't seen in 12 years sitting right behind me. And I just surrendered. And I felt this thing hit my chest, and it transcended and just felt like love just. So I basically used the story that was in my head, which is my faith, and the medicine kind of made it feel like it really happened. And so what that looks like is the body doesn't know the difference between a trip and reality. A nightmare feels real because of that effect. So if that's what happened in this trip, guess what? The neuroscience in my body is doing something so spiritual. That's what we need to study. And I don't think they're going to want to see what's going to say, what the data is going to show. Because when they light up that thing, they're going to see.
When you say you took something from a toad, you mean like a frog?
So the Sonoran Desert Toad, it lives in the southwest of America, north part of Mexico. It lives underground 9 months of the year, comes up to mate. It's got these sacks. They look like acidic Jewish sacks. And they, I don't know who the hell.
Jewish.
I'm telling you, like, if God was writing this story, it would make a lot of sense, because you wouldn't tell me. I would say, once upon a time, there was a group of mighty warriors. They called them frogmen, and they used a toad venom to heal themselves from the wounds of war. I'd be like, that sounds like some kind of Marvel movie.
Amazing. So you took this stuff from this frog, and you drank it?
No. They dry it out, and they put it in a vaporizer, and they actually smoke it.
Oh, and then it caused you to hallucinate, and in that hallucination state, you had what you call a spiritual moment, right? And you said that you surrender. What did you surrender?
What did I surrender?
Yeah.
From whatever that medicine was trying to prevent me to resetting. So I think this works as our nervous system, it needs to learn how to let go, like neurologically. And it can't do it when there's energy flowing in that. And so in order for that nervous system to allow to let go and reassociate, which is neuroplasticity, it has to feel safe. And that's what faith does. Faith allows us to feel safe. So and in that state, that's when the magic happens.
So I'm black and I'm slow and I'm really trying to understand it. So you surrender your nervous system?
Your psyche. Your nervous system is your mind.
Oh, so,
your mind is your nervous system. All that hardwiring, all those ideas, all those thoughts, all those things, like all those thoughts of, I can't believe I'm talking to this crazy white guy, like all that stuff going on. That's all bouncing my information off of your neocortex, and you're trying to base it off of your perception.
Amazing.
You see?
What? And so you said you felt like when you were hallucinating that you went into Christ?
Yeah, that's where my intention led me.
You went into Christ?
Yeah, in the vision that I had, I went into his, like, I saw myself go into his body, and I could see, and all I could, I felt like I was feeling with his eyes, and then I could feel shame and greed and just the darkest parts of humanity. And in that moment, I was feeling the loss from, you know, the place I was in. I lost my kids, my retirement, all this crap happened to me in 10 days. And I had my faith. I don't want to name drop too much, but real good friends with Jim Caviezel.
Let me ask you this. What did it feel like to be in Christ, to feel like you really went into Christ? And how do you know that was Christ when you don't really know Christ?
Excuse me?
What did it feel like when you went into Christ? I don't understand that.
When you say when you don't know Christ?
Yeah, how do you know what Christ feel like?
Well, doesn't the Bible tell us how he feels? It says in the shortest verse in the whole Bible, he wept.
Oh, he wept. And so when you went into Christ, you felt that you were weeping?
When I went into that, I was connecting my pain to what Christ would, I think, what my brain thought Christ would feel, which is he could feel the sorrow, the shame, the all the crap that we as a species, like the darkest part of humanity, I could feel it because I was associating my own feelings to that experience, and that's what I felt. Oh. It's my own take on it.
Amazing.
It's my own take.
And then when you overcame it, when the hallucination had gone away, how did you feel then?
Well, you're missing this one real vivid point of this whole thing is when I was in that state, in that place, it was when I was feeling that, I did what my faith taught me to do, which was what I'm trying to explain here is that experience to me, it symbolized Christ's understanding of this neurological phenomenon of letting go. Like the letting go is what I felt Christ did, and I was seeing it, and I was feeling it. And so when I let go, I was like, oh, that's what he did. Or vice versa. Maybe he did, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It was a freaking, like, I wasn't in that state of consciousness.
What the?
But I, right. But my point is, I learned, and that's the takeaway here. That's why it's a spiritual experience, is because
so
people take it away, and they, and you know what the crazy part is? The guys that, when I knew them in the SEAL teams, you kidding me? They would go after Christians and believers. And these are the guys that are finally disconnecting their trauma of their past with God, the thing that you know people do.
And so
they connect their trauma with God, and that's why they don't want God in their life.
Because I'm a little rushed now, but I'm going to ask this. When you let go, I'm sorry, tell me in a few words, you let go of what?
I let go of the fear of dying.
Oh. And so you said you took it again and you went into another hallucination. Why did you have to let it? Why did you have to take it again if you had let go of dying?
Well, I like to say it took rounds of thinking and rounds of things happening. It's probably not going to happen in one fall swoop. You know, I love the analogy of someone being baptized and they go to confession, or they, you know, they found forgiveness in the Lord, and then they walk out, and how many days to some people before they're right back where they forgot what they just did.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, is I don't like to judge people on saying, well, how many times did they do it? And how many things I'm like, hey, like, again, go look at the numbers of rehab right now and tell me what they look like. And they're horrible.
How many times have you done psychedelic drugs?
I did it quite a bit. Like in 7 years, I've probably done it over 10 times. Like, well, seven, like go to some place like Peru or where that in 7 years. Now there's another side of this, which is microdosing. And that's a whole nother thing. This pertains to what could potentially heal Parkinson's, early dementia, and Alzheimer's is what if sub effect. What if over time, if people learn how to use this and do, you know, incorporate this as a vitamin, what would that do to some of these symptoms, you know, like these neurological conditions? These are all questions that we could really break through on a lot of things if we would just be able to do the research.
And so do you do the psychedosing now?
Microdosing?
Microdosing.
Not as much. I've been taking much less than I did the first 3-4 years. The first couple of years, the standard, there's protocols for this. You can look this information up. Psilocybin is probably the one that a lot of people are using. A microdose of psilocybin is anywhere from as small as 10 to 20 milligrams every 3 days, or 2 days on, 3 days off.
Oh. And so you got to
think about all the SSRIs that, you know, this could affect too.
Well, you're not doing this psychedelic drug, you're doing this, the dosing thing. The psychedosing, right? What'd you call it?
It's called microdosing.
The microdosing. So when you're not doing the psychedelic thing from the frog, you're doing the microdosing from the plant.
Yeah.
Is it still from the frog?
No, that toad... It's called 5-MeO-DMT. Yeah, they call it the drug is 5-MeO-DMT.
But give me because of time, give me a quick response. Are you doing, so the microdosing, you're doing that from a different plant?
different. Yeah, that's like psilocybin.
And you do that every day?
No.
How often?
The protocols vary, but some guys are using it every 3 days. Some people use it 2 days on, 3 days off. So these are small amounts. These are not, you don't feel anything when you're on. If you're doing it right, you shouldn't be right. Barely feeling these.
Does the microdosing ever causes hallucination as well?
Not if you're doing it right.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
Hell no.
But
no,
it can if you overdo it or something like that.
Well, that's the problem. People think more is they want to do more. And psychedelics, you learn on them because if you do too much, you go, that was not fun. Like, that was not good.
Yeah.
I think people are going to have to learn intention. That's the biggest lesson here.
So let me ask, what type of traumas did you see while you were in the Navy SEAL? Can you tell me the types?
As a medic in the SEAL teams, when you're in combat, you see a lot of trauma.
Like what, for example? What would you see?
Oh, the trauma that really got me was our platoon did a breach, and sleeping on the other side of that door was a child. And, you know, they told me to go fix him, knowing that probably wasn't going to live. And there's things like that. I mean, there's also, lost a lot of good friends. And
but so you said that your platoon got killed a child or something?
Excuse me?
You said he killed someone, a child?
No, we blew a door open and the child was sleeping on the other side of the door.
Oh, and it killed the child?
We left the target after I treated him, so I don't really know if he made it or not.
And so did your platoon guy, he had he was traumatized from that?
There's a lot of stuff.
I see. And when you think about the trauma, does it bother you now when you think about it?
No, I guess I don't think about it as much. That's where the healing, I think, is that I'm not thinking about it. I don't have the nightmares.
Right.
I used to see my kids' faces on those kids for years.
Oh.
That's the problem with the mind, is that the experiences, they can do a lot of damage and they cause a lot of addictions. And we just, two decades of wars and all the wars combined, for a lot of it needless reasons, probably a lot of profit.
Yeah.
I think what we're seeing right now is a time where I don't know how this is going to play out. I really don't. It's going to open up a lot of more craziness and people that don't do this the right way. I know that. But there's a lot of people out there that could really be healed from this stuff and not living in a life of survival. I don't think God wants that for people.
But will there ever come a time where you don't need microdose or any of that stuff?
Absolutely.
So let me ask, do you have perfect peace now?
Perfect peace?
Perfect peace?
If perfect was achievable, I would say, yeah, this is perfect. But I don't think perfect's achievable. You're talking to a Navy SEAL here. I mean,
perfect peace?
This is the most peace in my life I've ever had, and I had to learn how to let go in order to have this peace. It involves a lot of letting go.
What would happen if you dropped your anger, had no anger at all? What would happen?
I wouldn't be alive. Anger is a emotion that we have. I mean, I have a way more love than I ever had anger. And I think it's because I dropped my relation. It has to do with fear. The less fear that I have, and it goes back to that instance on that medicine, the fear of dying is the fundamental thing that the nervous system is trying to avoid here is death. So because of that instance, it resets a lot of fear. And when you reset fear, guess what? You get more love because you're not in fear.
Well, you said that if you dropped your anger and you never had in your anymore, you said that you would, what do you mean you would die if you didn't have fear? I mean, if you didn't have anger.
Well, I just don't think, you know, anger is something that is there if we use it right. It could be righteous anger, but I'm not walking around angry. I'm walking around with an abundance of gratitude.
But how about you said that if you dropped your anger, you never had anger again, you would die? What do you mean by that?
When you asked me
what would happen if you dropped your anger and never had it inside of you ever again, what would happen?
I don't know.
I'm sorry?
I don't know. I don't know what that would feel like.
Why don't you drop it and find out? I'm sorry?
I don't feel like I'm walking around in a state of anger.
But you have it, though, right? It's in you.
Of course.
Why don't you drop it so it's not even in you and see what happens?
But that's the thing, is it's not that it will, like, the fact that you asked me about anger, I had to search for it because I don't feel anger.
That's because you're doing the dosing thing. But if you didn't do the dosing and the psychedelic, it will overwhelm you.
If I wasn't microdosing?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, it would.
I mean, I do seasons where I don't do anything. I do fat. I'm a big faster. I do a lot of fasting. Like, it's important.
Why don't
it's
you
spiritual.
Drop the anger and see what happens? And have no anger inside of you at all. Why don't you drop it and see what happens?
Okay. Done.
I'm sorry?
I dropped it. I wasn't hard.
Want me to tell you how to be done with the spirit of anger and never...
Yes, sir.
No matter what the situation happens, whatever situation happened out there, it would never affect you on the inside, no matter what it is. Would you like that?
Give it to me.
You got to forgive your mother. Your mother have created you in her image. And the thoughts and the feelings that you have is coming from the person that you hate. And the fear will go away when you drop the anger by going to your mother and forgiving her for turning you away from your father. And you wouldn't need the psychedelic or the new old stuff because you would have a free mind.
The only problem with your assumption is that actually, it's the anger towards the father, not the mother.
And why you angered your father, but not your mother?
So my wounds were paternal wounds, not maternal wounds. And see, there's different wounds. There's maternal and paternal.
So you're angry at your father, not your mother?
Yeah, I had
what
anger towards
father
my father.
What did your father do to you that made you angry?
Oh man, I love. Why did we talk about this from the beginning? Hold on, let me get a little taller here. So the thing, when you brought up anger, that was what I saw growing up. That's why I became a SEAL, is because I understood anger because I had a father who was really angry.
What did he do to you?
Huh?
What did your father do to you that made you angry? What did he do to you?
My father, I don't feel like he did. I've done a lot of work on letting go of the anger or the bitterness.
What did your father do to you that made you angry at him? What did he do to you?
A lot of verbal abuse, a lot of physical abuse, just anger. His anger was it was violent.
But he was treated you that way because you took the side of your mother and your mother turned you against him And so dealing with you was saying it was the same as dealing with your mama.
No, you're I.
Have you forgiven your mother for turning you away from him?
Sure. Yeah. So that's what the medicine does. You see, Jesse, it allows you to understand these things and do the work in that trip to forgive in realms so deep that you wake up and go, oh, I need to forgive that person.
Did you go and forgive
your
mother? And
that's how it works. Huh?
Did you go and forgive your mother for turning?
Oh, absolutely. Forgave myself. Jesse, I had to forgive myself.
No, but I'm asking you, did you go and forgive your mother for turning you away from your father?
Yeah, no, that wasn't what happened. It was my father came from an abusive dad who didn't see himself love his wife the way he should have. And when my dad would bring it out and my mom and us, that's what I saw. He was a good man, but he had anger issues.
Because he married his mother. He married a woman that all men married the person they hate. And your mother was very difficult, and your father didn't know how to handle her because he had not overcome his mother.
Are you married?
I'm sorry. Isn't that true or not?
Are you married?
No, not now.
Okay.
I live with him, so I know what it's like.
Yeah, I'm on my second wife. My first one was the worst. Oh, it was horrible. This one is incredible.
But listen.
You know what happened, Jesse? I healed myself. That's the difference.
But let me,
the
you're not, that you I didn't attracted answer that,
that
for
first
me.
Wife.
Did you go,
was
did
evil
you go
as
and
hell.
Did you go and forgive your mother for turning you away from your father?
Yes, but that was a long, long time ago. It wasn't, when the first divorce happened in eighth grade and I blamed her. But what I realized was I didn't see the full picture. I didn't understand until I had to live with him. And then I saw. And then I go, shit.
Oh, you didn't understand that your mother was driving your father crazy and he didn't know how to deal with the hell in her?
No, that's not what happened. My mom was raising three kids, going to school nighttime. They were trying to make a lot of money, and what happened was finances crumbled the marriage. So it was always about getting the house on the lake and everybody looking good, looking the American part. That's the dynamics of the family that I had.
But did you know that the woman, your first wife, was just like your mother? And that's why you couldn't handle her?
No, she's not. No, she was not even close to my mother.
Ask your father. He'll tell you.
Huh?
Ask your father about it. He'll tell you.
You do. You, Jesse, your batting average is going down exponentially.
Well, you should ask him about it. See, Dad, was it difficult dealing with my mother? He'll tell you.
But I love this because I study stories, so I want to know what the story was, this backstory, what's that story. And the reality is it has to do with people come from the lack of. So if my mom's lack of was she came from two alcoholic parents, he was a veteran and a musician and a good time and man, and her mom was an alcoholic. And so that's where her lack came from, was safety. If they didn't have the nucleus, and that's the problem with society, Jesse. There's this crippling of the family unit. And as a veteran, I can tell you, as a veteran, nothing's more crippling to a family than going to freaking war.
But let me tell you this: what you don't realize is that when people go to war, they're already traumatized by their mothers turning them away from their fathers. They're already angry and traumatized, so when they're already overreacting to situations, right? So when you go to the military and you see situations, you're just overreacting and just keep the trauma going, the hell going. But once you forgive, God will forgive you and give you perfect peace. And I promise you, you would never overreact to anything else, no matter what happens out there. It would not be happening in you. And so, but you got to forgive. Because your mother couldn't help herself, and your father couldn't help himself because he married his mother and didn't know how to deal with it. And so you got to forgive so that you could overcome the thoughts. All thoughts are all lies, all the time about anything. And they're not your thoughts. They're straight out of hell. All angry people live in their thoughts. And they think that they are the thoughts, but they're not.
What do you think? That's right.
That makes sense?
You're not your soul. The soul is not the thought. The thoughts are a product of the mind. See, with the,
well,
that's
they're
the
not
part
even
of the
a part of the mind. They're a product of evil. All thoughts are evil. The so-called good ones and the so-called bad ones, they're both imposter, and they're all evil. And they're of your father, the devil, not of God. And when
how can you have a positive thought on God, and how could you say it's evil if it's a thought about God?
You can't have a positive thought on God. A thought about God is just a thought about God. An idea about God is just an idea about God. It doesn't mean that you know God at all, because God's thoughts are not your thoughts. God's ideas are not yours, not his, not yours. They're from evil. You're not going to know God until you stop thinking about God.
I can't say I agree with that.
The thoughts are keeping you away from knowing God, because they're...
Do you know what thoughts are? Thoughts are the digital form of an analog sensory concept.
No, they're evil.
That you're having a thought because of something in your psyche. That's where the thought comes from. And the thought is actually...
That's evil.
So the golden triangle of psychology is your thoughts, your actions, and your behavior, your feelings.
The thoughts are evil that made up...
You got your actions and your feelings. Those are all connected. That's this golden triangle of psychology, Jesse. So your thought and your feeling and your actions are all connected through psychology.
No, they're all evil. The thoughts are of your father, the devil. And when you think, you feel. Because you can't have the feelings unless you have the thought first. You can't feel anger unless you think anger first. You can't feel good.
That's a good question.
And unless you think good. So once you stop thinking and all thoughts disappear, you're free. From emotions.
So, yeah,
from
free.
Emotions and everything. Yeah. But you got to do that without the drugs.
Right. Yeah, that's right. So now here's the funny part. Would a Christian go up to another Christian who's been on SSRIs and say, you know what? You need to do that without those SSRIs.
Yes.
They would?
Yeah.
They would say you shouldn't be on mental health drugs?
No, you'd tell them if you want to have a
clear... That would be
No, you
be
would
kind
tell
of crazy.
Them if you want to have a clear mind, you got to drop the darkness of your imagination. You got to stop thinking.
So more feeling, less thinking? Is that what you're saying?
No, no feelings and less thinking. No thinking. When you stop thinking, the feelings disappear as well. Because the feelings are not from God either.
So you want to... So basically what you're saying is you want to shut down the thinking and the feelings.
No, what I want to encourage you to do, you got to drop the anger. And then when you drop the anger, fear disappear, thinking disappear, and you live in the presence of God rather than living in the hell with Satan in your mind. Satan is of your mind.
Yes. No, I understand what you're saying totally. And I agree with a certain part of that. The present, we call it the present moment. We want to get guys into the present moment.
But you can't find the present moment when you're high. The psychedelic drugs are keeping you away from the present moment.
There is no high. If I'm doing a trip or a treatment, or if I'm going to go out meditate and do this with intention, I'm not getting high. I'm using nature to go into nature and connect with God.
But you're not.
No,
no, you
middle man.
You're
needed.
Not going to connect
no
with man. God. You're not going to connect with God that way. You got to go in within and do it without anything but the spirit of truth, but the light.
That's right. Yeah.
You can't use
my belief
is
that God,
you away
my
from
belief
it.
Is God made nature. My belief is God made nature.
Well, he
and if
you want
use
you
it in the intention of God, then that connects me straight to the source. That's my version. And it's kind of similar to the agnostic gospels, which a lot of them talk about going inward. And I think that's why they were left out of the canon books, because they didn't want people going inward.
Nice.
That's why.
So let me ask this because of time. Is Donald Trump doing amazing work now?
Pray for him every day. I pray for this nation. I pray for Democratic leaders. I pray for the Republican leaders. I pray for those who are living in fear. I pray for those that are, you know, that have the ability to make the changes necessary, because I don't have a good feeling about where this is leading. I think we're going to have a pandemic of mental health issues. And I think that where I think you and me would agree on is that only Jesus Christ in that story, that like that's what's going to save our country.
Let me ask you this. I'm just running out of time and so much. But what I want to do, I got to put you on the hot seat.
Go for it.
I need you to answer these questions as quickly as possible. All right. Oh, I know what I wanted to ask. You said your first wife took everything you had, including your children, right?
Yes.
Did you tell me that? Yeah. Did you say that?
I did.
And how did that affect you when your children were taken away from you?
Is the hardest thing a man or woman can ever do. But what I got out of this experience, this lesson, was letting go. I wrote it in the song that I recorded in the Opry, which is a big country venue, and wrote in Johnny Cash's dressing room. It was called Let Go. And the last part of the chorus was, it ain't losing if we're just learning to let go. And I say that the last chapter of loving anything is truly letting go. So for me, I turned it, my greatest pain, my greatest grief, my greatest sorrow, greatest failure, I turned it into a positive. And I think we can turn our pain into passion. And that's what I did.
Right on. So you got to let go of the thoughts so you can let go of the anger in the same way. And only the light can do that if you surrender to the light.
Every day.
It will come and it will shine on the darkness. But you have to let it do it without you putting any effort at all into it. So let me ask, to the man, the passion of Christ. Oh, you painted that?
No, sir. I'm good friends with Jim Caviezel. I told you I was about to tell you a story about this, but I'm great friends with Jim.
Oh, okay. Should a man... I've noticed that educated women don't make for good wives and mothers. Should a man ever marry an educated woman if you want a family?
Couldn't understand that. Should a man marry an educated woman if he wants a family?
Right, because educated women don't make for good wives and mothers.
Is that your opinion, or is you're trying to tell me to agree with you?
No, I'm asking you, do you disagree with that?
I don't believe that's true. I think it's half true. I think there's some truth in there, but I think once you make an absolute, it's not true.
And why is that?
Because my wife is educated. My mom's educated. A lot of women are educated. It doesn't have to do with the education. It has to do with their intention and the environment. If a man is loving a woman and serving her the way he's supposed to, as Christ served the church, and a woman is loving a man, that does no difference if she's educated or not.
But women that are educated think they're equal to men.
Who?
The educated women.
You're making an assumption.
No,
of all women.
They want to go to work. They want to be in leadership role.
Some of them do, yeah. There's a horrible thing in our country about this. It's that, you know what, you know the problem is? They make people in survival mode so that the family can't be a freaking family that was in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s,
yeah.
Because it's too hard to do that. And now we have this end of capitalization kind of bullshit right now with the corporation of the government. It's to break up the family unit. I agree with you. In a classic Christian home, the mom should be raising the kids. The mom should be there nurturing, because that's what a female energy is supposed to be. They're nurturers.
Well, women created
a kid needs to have both protection. You know what it is? It's there's parental, maternal, and paternal energy, right? You got strong dad energy. The kid feels safe.
Right.
He's being supplied. He's like, I feel safe. I got a father. I got a mother. I feel nurtured. That's like very utopic. Not many people
let me ask you,
I ever met have that environment.
Tell me, I'm sorry, we're running out of time here. were women created to lead or to follow?
Respond.
Huh?
Respond.
They were created to follow?
Respond.
No, were they created to lead or to follow?
Respond. Respond.
Respond? What do you mean?
They came out of a rib, didn't they?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's
they were
part
created
of
to
man.
Follow.
Well, man, of man, right?
Yeah.
So if the man leads, the woman will respond effectively. If the man doesn't lead, the woman will still respond. It just won't be very pretty.
But
so
then God created a woman.
I think of a lion, female lion.
Tell me because of
female
time.
Lion.
Tell me because of time. Did God create women to lead or to follow?
Respond.
So listen, I got to put you on the hot seat. I need you to
have been at those SEAL interrogation schools. Those are hot seats.
The hot seat.
What is a man?
Oh, man. What is a man?
What is a man?
One word?
What is a man?
A being?
A what?
A being.
Okay. Was Jesus white or black?
Oh, man. He definitely looked a lot more like you than me, probably.
Did you take the jab?
Hell no. Are you kidding me?
True or false? When she's crying.
I don't trust Big Pharma. You think I'm going to take some vaccine that they haven't tested? Are you kidding me?
Right on. True or false? When she's crying, she's lying.
Oh. False.
I'm sorry?
It's not a true or false question.
Yes, it is. True or false? When she's
intentioned.
When she's crying, she's lying.
If he ain't smiling, you're dying.
True or false?
False.
I'm sorry?
False.
Oh, okay. Who would win in a fight between 20 Marines and 20 Navy SEALs?
Are they East Coast SEALs or West Coast SEALs? Just kidding.
I don't know.
It would be a draw.
Is the Earth flat or round?
Round.
Should we keep Trump, the Great White Hope, in the White House for another term after this one?
Oh, my gosh. I hope there is another term. Yeah, I would be for him. I mean, I don't see the Democrats having anybody remotely come close in the next 4 years unless something crazy happens, which is my biggest fear.
Rock music or rap music?
Oh, rock.
Do we need...
I'd say bluegrass.
Do we need more white babies?
What?
Do we need more white babies?
Sure, what the hell? Put another shrimp on the Bobby.
Does a chicken have lips?
No.
Is it ever okay to call a woman fat?
With a pH.
Which is worse, abortion or slavery?
Woo. Oh, to kill or to imprison, right?
Which is worse?
To kill.
Abortion or slavery?
That's a loaded one. From a philosophical standpoint, I would say abortion would be worse because you're not giving the life a chance to be free. The other one is horrible because you're taking away freedom.
So you said abortion?
Philosophically, yes.
Should men be allowed to play in women's sports?
Can I swear? No, not even. I'm not a fan of any of that bullshit.
Should women be allowed to play in men's sports?
No. Oh, you said should women be allowed to play in sports, period.
Should men be allowed to play in women's sports?
No.
Should women be allowed to play in men's sports?
If they don't have the opportunity to play in a women's sport and there's only one available, then yeah. But if they have available to play in a female versus female, then they should be female versus female.
So I'm not sure what you're saying. You said no, men should not play in women's sport, right?
Men should not be able to. I don't think men should be allowed to compete in women's sport. And if you're referring to
should women be allowed to play in men's sport?
So the reason I'm hesitating on this is because when I...
That's amazing.
What?
Dude, women, you said no, men should not be allowed to play in women's sport. You're clear, no.
Yeah.
And so I asked, should women be allowed to play in men's sport? You stumble.
Because I'm basing it off the experience that I had growing up, and I'm 45, so there wasn't a lot of wrestlers, young women wrestlers, when I was in high school.
So should women be allowed to play in men's sport?
If they want, yes.
So then why can't men play in women's sport then?
Because we're not built the same. We're genetically superior.
So when they play in men's sport, are they built differently or something?
Genetically superior in terms of physicality.
Right. So when women play in men's sport, are the men built differently?
What?
You said that men should not play in men's sport because men are built differently, right?
Right, yeah. We have an advantage.
And so, but if women are allowed to play in men's sport, are the men still built differently?
It'd be like you trying to compete against people that are faster, stronger.
So should women be allowed to play?
You're not really competing.
So should women be allowed to play in men's sport?
Yes.
But men should not be allowed to play in women's sport?
No.
What? No. That's amazing. I mean.
Because I don't see the other one being a problem. Like, there's not a lot of, the reason I have that.
Well, why
that
there, opinion, if one is not a problem, why is the other one a problem? It's the same thing.
No. Is a woman and man built the same?
Right. They're not built the same. So men should not be allowed to play in women's sports because of that. And women should not be allowed to play in men's sports because of that.
I can see your side of the argument here.
Does it make sense?
Yeah. And I said in the beginning, if they don't have the availability, because I don't, listen, when I was in Iraq, those girls, I got in trouble for handing a little girl a soccer ball. They said they would kill her if they saw her, beat her if they saw her playing a sport.
But
you could only give them backpacks. And they were only they're going to school to their second grade.
But
the girls.
Men should not play in women's sport because of that reason. Women should not play in men's sport for the same reason. Because the men are still tougher and bigger and stronger. But let me do this. Do you love white people?
Some.
Did you have fun?
Less. I mean, I'm the older I get, the more I want to be in nature, away from the species.
Did you have fun?
Crumble. Huh?
Did you have fun?
Excuse me?
Did you enjoy this? Did you have fun?
Oh, are you kidding me? Anytime. I know it got a little, heated, but I'm glad because I think that's what people need to do is people need to be able to talk. And that's the problem. People aren't, they're so scared to talk and be honest. I'm like, why? Just be honest.
Right on. Tell the folks how to get your website or whatever you want to put out, promote.
Sure. On Instagram, it's Flow State Frogman. My new nonprofit that I'm starting here in the Music City of Nashville, Tennessee, is the Neuroscience and Wellness Initiative. We'll be working with veterans, police officers, firefighters, nurses, anybody who serves the community that needs to heal from a neuroscience and wellness perspective. We're here to serve. And thank you very much, Jesse. I really appreciated this.
I appreciate it. It was fun, Tommy. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
God bless you.
And thank you all for tuning in. I absolutely appreciate it. Don't forget to like, follow, ring the bell, all that good stuff. Check out our merch at jessevpeterson.shop. What else? Do the become a member support bond. I mean, the fallenstate.tv by becoming a member on the YouTube channel there, bond. The fallenstate.tv or locals.com. Let my producer know if you want to see other interesting guests on the show. Producer at thefallenstate.tv. Thank you all. Tommy, that was amazing. Thank you, man.
Thank you. God bless you.